Be among the first to experience Ardent Community's newest luxury apartments in Galloway, Ohio, The Pinnacle and The Reserve at Parkside Village. Enjoy spacious modern floor plans designed for comfort, style, and convenience. Amenities built around your lifestyle, beautiful finishes, thoughtful community spaces, and the perfect location. Move in now and live rent-free for 2 full months. Start fresh in a place that truly feels like home. The Pinnacle and The Reserve at Parkside Village. Call or visit ardentcommunities.com to schedule a tour or check out our rent specials.
Off the Ball, GAA.
In our setup, it's the next man up. If things don't maybe run your way on a championship day or any day for that matter, the competition is really good.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball.
In association with Cadbury,
official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here with you to look back on what was a great weekend of football, both in the WSL and the Championship. Lots of exciting things happening there as several teams are still looking to qualify for the Women's Super League for next season, and a successful weekend for Arsenal in the first leg of their bid to make it to back-to-back Champions League finals. Kane McCabe playing a central role in that against Lyon yesterday. Joining me to look back on all of that and everything else that happened around the world of football over the weekend is Karen Duggan. Karen, how are things?
Things are good, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm good. I thoroughly enjoyed getting to watch the Champions League yesterday on RT. We were talking about it last week and we were just saying that, you know, it's nice to have access to these things in ways that we haven't had before, and nice to see former Irish players commentating on it, analysing it, doing punditry around it, especially when you have someone like Katie McCabe playing on such a big stage. And speaking of Katie McCabe, we have some big news that was very kindly sent to us, courtesy of Emma Carroll, just before we started recording. And that is that The Athletic are reporting, Megan Fringa and Charlotte Harper there are reporting, that Manchester City are strongly pursuing both Kane McCabe and Beth Mead. Now, we've talked about this potential for a long time, and I think we've said multiple times that we didn't expect Katie anyways to go to a rival, or for Arsenal to let her go to a rival, but this seems to be that City are on the prowl.
Yeah, and if you're Arsenal, I'd be looking over at Vivian Miedema about to get her hands potentially on a WSL title and still being central to the run that they're on, and thinking, better not let that happen again. So I suppose they're out of contract.
Yeah, both out of contract. So they're both free agents.
I would call that poor business on Arsenal's side, whether they wanted to move them on or not. You've got Katie McCabe, who we see up close and personal, is still close, if not still in her prime. She's world class, and you're going to let her go for free. The WSL has moved beyond that now. Where we've seen a lot with the lower clubs, we can talk about Man United's transfer prowess, but I would have thought that Arsenal would have done better business there. Their investment a bit more, considering she went over for free 10 years ago, what they've gotten out of her, and they still could have gotten more. It just seems, or if talking about her like she's a commodity, if I was Arsenal, I would be keeping her. Based on versatility, based on everything she brings to the team, she's a leader, and left backs of that standard are very, very hard to come by.
Yeah, well, I think like it even says it in the article, you know, she's having one of her best seasons for Arsenal, which says a lot. She's had a lot of very good seasons for them. She's played in all 35 matches across all competitions. You know, she was crucial yesterday in the Champions League for them. She has been probably one of the more consistent players that we've seen in the squad this season, in terms of especially around the kind of middle part of the season when Arsenal were struggling, you know, she was the player that they could rely on. We know about her versatility. Now, the side to this is that it's expected that Onabagie is going to sign for Arsenal in the coming weeks. So
A
with
right
that,
back.
yeah. But like that seems to be what most people are saying, that like it in some ways it's going to impact on Katie's playing time in the squad. Is it time for her to move on? Who knows?
I think if Chelsea can manage having Ali Carpenter and Lucy Bronze, like what a great complaint to have, two
Yeah.
world-class full-backs. But Man City, I completely understand why Man City would be swooping in there. Obviously, did Alex Greenwood playing left back at the weekend? She's probably a better centre back. And to have two left footers as good as both of those would be on set pieces, and just to build depth within their squad, you can still get a good 3, 4 years
Oh,
of
easily.
at that level out of Katie McCabe. So
Yeah.
that's still a solid piece of business if Man City can do it. Obviously, at this point, because Katie is that good, it'll depend on wage bills and stuff. But I'd say if City can clinch the title, obviously they weren't in Champions League last year and they could still afford to have brilliant players and to keep brilliant players, and they still have a very good squad. So, more power to Man City if they can pull this one off.
Yeah, if they can pull it off, it'll be very impressive. So the article says that no deals have yet been agreed and nothing can be signed until June 1st due to restrictions on clubs speaking to players under contract at teams within their association. Sources close to both players insist that no deals have been finalized. However, sources briefed on the matter say there is growing anticipation that City will get the moves over the line at the end of this season. So if
City
that's
have a
not
good
a
balance. I think City as well have a good balance age-wise as well, because they've done a lot of investment in young players. We obviously saw Tara Hanlon going over ourselves. She's out on loan now, but they've brought in a good few kind of like 18-year-olds. Benay, who we saw make such a splash at the last Euros, who has kind of hit the ground running with City as well. So
Yeah.
it's not that they would run out of steam in a couple of years by making these kind of investments, because they're doing it both ways. And their turnover is not huge. We don't see a lot of people moving on from City unless they want to go elsewhere. So it'll be very, very interesting. If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be upset by that. I would have been hoping that there would have been a nice first class flight over to America for Katie, but it doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, personally, it's just like all my favorite players are just slowly moving away from Arsenal to City. I might have to start changing allegiances soon. I'm going over to see the Liverpool Arsenal game at the end of the season. And I was looking at my jerseys the other day, and the only Arsenal jersey that I have that the women have actually played in has Miedema on the back of it. So may need to fix that
Gonna have to switch that up.
before.
Go back to the retro one. The retro one kind of covers all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that's gonna be have to be the case for this one. But yeah, we will definitely be paying attention to this. It'd be a massive move. It'd be a massive statement of intent from City, and also it'll be interesting from an Arsenal perspective to see if they do try and change things before the end of the season, because as you were saying, Karen can't really be losing players like McCabe
They're
and
going to
like
have to replace. Like they're going to. I
yeah.
assume they have a long-term strategy in that they're allowing these players to leave on a free because they have something in place. They have something lined up. We haven't really heard too much through the rumor mill. Only Ona Batty was a fullback, but you're going to need more than that, realistically.
Yeah. Oh God. I was really hoping for that first class flight to even to Spain or somewhere. I don't mind. She can go and beat us in a Barcelona squad, in the Champions League, but
Yeah.
maybe not with City to a title. That would be painful. Okay, let's look at the Champions League before we go into the rest of the WSL, because it was a big weekend there. Barcelona and Bayern played out in the first game, and then we had Arsenal versus Lyon yesterday. This wasn't a Lyon team that we're used to seeing, I don't think, in terms of their defense. I mean, the goal alone was probably one of the poorest goals I've seen in a while. Although there was a similar one in the Men's Champions League a couple of weeks ago, in terms of a
Yeah,
mistake from
people
the
were quick to
goalkeeper.
hop on that, all right, weren't they? On Twitter and stuff. But yeah.
Look at Neuer a couple of weeks ago, and it's the exact same thing. So we won't go into it too much in terms of the quality on display, but it just felt like Leon never really properly got going.
No, again, I think they were looking towards maybe heaps to create something out of nothing. You can't do that by yourself, otherwise it was a little bit pedestrian from them. Not a classic by any means, but just a huge result for Arsenal. They would have been disappointed to go the goal down, considering how they were playing and how defensively sound they seemed. Ruben Moy, I think you have to give her a little shout out, because often she's just kind of the person that people see as a journeyman, because it's always about Leah Williamson, Katie McCabe and stuff like that. But I thought she put in a really solid display. And yeah, it's just a huge, huge win to take away, huge confidence boost to have outplayed Leon, I guess, in that way.
Yeah, I think what you saw from that game was A, that there was a mentality within Arsenal to go behind and then be able to, you know, get themselves back into the game, as bad as the mistakes were from Leon defensively. But also, like, they kept plugging away. And then when they did have that advantage and it was hitting into the final, like, 5-10 minutes, there was a maturity within the team to not start panicking and throw the ball away. You know, they were holding it really well. Katie was actually kind of central to a lot of that stuff. As you said, when Moy came on, I think Leah Williamson went off after about 65 minutes. And then when Moy came on, and Louise Quinn and Anya Grum were chatting about this on RTE's coverage yesterday, and you said it there, you know, a player who has been with Arsenal for so long potentially could have gone somewhere else and got more playing time and not been like the deputy to Leah Williamson or other players in the team, but has been so committed to the club, has never looked like leaving once. And every time she is called upon, you know, especially in, I would say, the last season or two, she's really come into her own and has found a real maturity in the way that she plays. So she was great in terms of...
I think it was Taylor Hines came on, Ruben Moy started, didn't she?
Sorry, that was it. Yeah.
But like, again, just back to Katie thing, like, Hines is a fine signing, but when you compare them both positionally, you don't feel as comfortable with that, you know, on your left flank as you do Katie McCabe. But obviously great to have the squad player like that. I can see Arsenal again, like, the form that they're in now is pretty sparkling. Like, there's no doubt now in my mind that they're not going to come second in the league, which, considering where they were pre-Christmas, seemed, you know, obviously impossible. It's to do with other results that have happened around them, but like, you just don't see them slipping at this point. They seem to just be hitting a stride.
You can't be saying things like that.
I'm not saying that about the men's team, come on. I'll never say that about the
men's team. Yeah. Well, if you look at the actual WSL table, so Arsenal are currently in fourth, but they also have three games in hand over the three teams ahead of them, and they are on 38 points. Chelsea, who are on second, are on 43, and then City are on 49 after their surprise defeat over the weekend. So there's plenty of space there for them to make up the points and definitely get ahead of Chelsea and United.
Yeah, three games in hand. They're 2 points behind City. We can get onto the City game next, maybe, but like, I didn't love after the match Alex Greenwood calling the next two games two cup finals. I think you could see her reactions to the goals. I think there's a little bit of emotion creeping into the City team that we hadn't seen. We were always praising them throughout the season just for their levels of consistency, and at the wrong time, it seems to be just getting squeaky bum time.
Well, I mean, they still have a significant lead at the top of the table, but as you say, it is an
Well, we'll call it a 2-point lead, really. If we think what happens going to happen.
Yeah. But I suppose when you look at their run in as well, you know, you would have said that about the Brighton match as well, but you know,
Brighton seem to be picking it up as well. So that's the only thing. Arsenal have to play Brighton on the Wednesday after the Champions League.
Yeah.
So that's obviously the big one for them if they're to sustain the pressure on City. But obviously City then have two of the bottom three teams in West Ham and Liverpool at their last few games, who are both now safe. So again, it takes that, like, worry, I guess, out of it, that they're fighting for their lives and they can scrap to the death.
Yeah, but I suppose as well, like Liverpool in particular, you kind of feel like they're a team that, you know, haven't proven themselves this season and have a lot more that they want to prove of themselves. You know, we've talked about in the past that we thought they would be kind of going on the sort of run that we've seen United go on as of late, and it hasn't happened for them. And I think they're, you know, whenever you hear the team talk about this season, there's massive disappointment. And obviously, there were some outside factors as well affecting that. But, you know, I do. They've been, I suppose, they've been a banana skin for a couple of teams this season, no matter what point that they've been at in their own journey. And I think that'll be an interesting game. I still think City will win it, but I do think it will be an interesting one. The West Ham one, less so, I think. I think that game will be more, as you say, a team who's safe and just wanting to see out the
Just
end of the season.
get on the next flight to Ibiza.
Yeah. okay, let's look at that City game. So, and it was a surprise win for Brighton. They have been, you know, on the up a little bit more, but again, just such an inconsistent team that it's really hard to know what side you're going to get whenever you watch them play.
Similar kind of to Spurs in that way. They can, well, what I would say about Brighton is attacking wise, they have some really, really good patterns. You can see that some of the players work really, really well together. Obviously, you had Haley really stepping up, or Hallie, is it Hallie or Haley? Hallie,
Oh, yeah, I think.
really stepping up. Obviously, Kirby getting the assists that she did. She's got the intelligence that is just can glue an attack together, and we saw that just her vision and stuff like that. Where they've obviously been inconsistent is defensively, and we did see shades of that. To be honest, in the first half, City probably should have been out of sight. Brighton were playing themselves into trouble. Carolyn scored really early on. Obviously, Hayes won't want to see that clearance again, but like she made up for it later on with good performances and some really good long range passes as well. And then when Bunny Shaw was straight through and she hit the post shortly after that, I think if that had gone in, and Carolyn also missed a 1v1, if either of those chances had gone in the first half, I think Brighton might have found that deficit a bit more difficult just mentally to make up. But then that team goal that Halle scored to make it 1-1, and then second half is night and day. City just never came out of the traps at all, and Brighton really did and took it to them and were deserving of their lead, really, you'd have to say.
Yeah, we've seen this a couple of times from City, especially in recent weeks, where for a team that has looked so polished all season, who has, you know, incredible players, just like a little bit of a wobble. What do you put that down to? Do you put that down to maybe a bit of preemptive, like, whew, okay, we're soaring ahead at the top of the table. We don't have Champions League. You know, this is what we have to concentrate on. Just taking the foot off the gas a little bit, or taking the eye off the prize a little bit, because there's too many mature players in there, you would say, for either of those things, but there must be something behind it.
No, I don't think so. I think it's just like when it's going for you, it really goes for you. And it was at the start of the season, like they're hitting the bar, keepers are pulling off really good saves, like they're getting themselves in those positions. And it is not to minimize it or, but it seems like the luck isn't quite with them that was there before. They're still creating a lot of chances. Maybe they have created more in previous games, but I don't know. They weren't as dominant as they could be. Maybe it's a little bit of fatigue setting in. Maybe it is that mentality thing and luck as well. And I can't really put my finger on it because every time I watch them, I'm still like, God, they're very good to watch. Do you know?
They are a lot more fun to watch than Chelsea were in previous title winning seasons, I have to say. And maybe that is just a sense of newness of not watching a team that's Chelsea, you know, win. But
In cruise control.
yeah. Okay, we'll look then to the other part of the race for Europe next season and Manchester United and their hopes suffering a bit of a setback at the weekend. They fell to a nil all draw against Tottenham, another team who've had a fairly inconsistent run. They'll probably be happy enough with a draw. They've had three losses before this and one win in their last five games. You could tell the frustration in this Manchester United team after the game with the outlets that they did speak to. Just in that, once again, it feels like they've reached a certain hurdle and they've just faltered slightly.
I'd say they've faltered quite a lot. Spurs were the better team, you know. They definitely could have had two goals in the second half. And obviously, since, just looked back on it, since March, United have had seven games, including Champions League, and one win out of that. That's not Champions League form, unfortunately. And they've picked up the knocks and the team look fatigued, and it's all the things that we spoke about in other years. But their performances at the start of the season kind of plastered over it because the energy was there. They were hitting those levels. They were getting the wins against the likes of Spurs that maybe they'd faltered in previous years. But again, it's just, like you say, they've gone over that ledge now where it seems they don't have anything more to give, and they've run out of ideas on the pitch, and mentally they don't seem to be able to come up with anything else. They never looked in control of the game, I didn't think, which is obviously disappointing because United were trying to separate themselves from the likes of Spurs and Brighton and trying to attach themselves more so to the title race. But it looks like they're going to miss out on Champions League now, which is going to be a huge blow, I think. Obviously, financially as well, it's a big thing, because we know they don't have the backing. So to lose out on that and the exposure of that and any revenue that would come from it, it will affect a team like Man United a lot more than it affected a Man City this year, you know, who were still able to bring in more players and develop more. And that was the last couple of matches and the points dropped there, and basically handing the Champions League spot to Arsenal would be very draining, I'd imagine, for the players.
Do you think that part of it is that lack of squad depth coming into this like final run-in? Obviously, they did like well enough for a first Champions League. You know, they would have wanted to have gone deeper in the competition, but as a first run out, you have to say that they held themselves to a good standard. But there has been that faltering in the league, and you know, one thing that I think we've hoped to see from United more and more is consistency, and consistency in form, consistency in bringing players in, consistency in keeping themselves in that Champions League spot. And that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Now, they do still have to play Chelsea on the final day, which could be an interesting one for them, depending on how results go over the next week or so. But Wash,
look, they did bring some players in. We have to say, like, I was impressed by the level of signing of players, the likes of, you know, Schuler and stuff. But it's almost like they haven't really had time to figure out how those attackers fit in. You know, you've got Wangerheim, you've got Schuler, you got Turland, who they were dropping back into the 10, even though we know that she's an out and out striker. And yet Mallard was our main threat all season. So I don't know if we've gotten the dynamic right, or if they've gotten the dynamic right there yet. Maybe a pre-season together will help them to figure that out a little bit more. Because they made, like, as much as they didn't make enough signings, they made more signings this year than what we had been used to as a fan base. But again, we didn't see a marquee signing. We didn't see an Olivia Smith. We were delighted to get Jess Park, but it was at the expense of losing Grace Clinton to a rival. So I'd love to see us make a marquee signing and not lose someone as a result, you know. I would have loved if they went in for Ona Badia again, but obviously that's wishful thinking.
You never know. The season...
Like, this is it. Like, they're not having the allure of the Champions League now again is going to mean that they're going to have to be more creative in the transfer market again. So it depends who's in charge of that and how far they're casting their net.
Do you think, so it was reported yesterday that the Athletic were refused the right to ask any questions of Mark Skinner post-match because a press officer said that there was an article that Megan Feringo, who writes for The Athletic, had written after they exited the Champions League. And the article was very much a like, what next sort of thing, you know, like disappointing to exit the Champions League. Lots of sourced information in there about, you know, how players were feeling. Not overtly negative, one would think, in any shape or form, you know, some criticism, but like the criticisms that were there were mostly coming from people inside the club. And, you know, she tweeted about this yesterday and said that they wouldn't allow her to ask any questions after the fact. Do you think that shows like a mentality within the club at the moment? Because, you know, it seems like a weird time, all things considered, to start punishing journalists for what has been, like, anyone who watched United this season, a pretty up and down sort of season.
I think it shows that there are questions to be asked, that they're not comfortable answering yet because they don't have the answers. Would be my thoughts on it. I didn't see anything in that article that wasn't factual. It's calling out that other teams have invested more, that their wage bills are higher, that Mark Skinner is a different coaching style, that he's a one-on-one manager as opposed to the tactician on field. Some people use their coaches more. Some people like to have full control of what's going on. But we see that that's across the entire sphere of football. So again, there's nothing in that that's critical. Again, the Maya Letizia called out the fact that they conceded from set pieces more than they would have liked. That's a fact. Like, you could see that. That's down on papers and stats. Last year, they were much better, about half the amount of goals conceded from set pieces. So there's nothing in it that wasn't, there's nothing damning in it. So yeah, I don't think that they need to be doing that. I don't think that Man United are in a position to be alienating any kind of journalists, any exposure they can get, anything like that. I think just you got to roll with the punches if you want to be up there with the big dogs. You're going to get more criticism. There's going to be more eyes on you, and you have the name Manchester United. And while it doesn't mean the same thing in women's football because they don't have the backing, they're not the most followed, richest club in the world. They're still a relatively new club and are still doing quite well based on that. But they have that branding and they have that name, so there's a weight that comes with that, and they need to be able to shoulder that and come across as a big club. And doing things like that takes away from it, I think.
Yeah, 100% agree with what you're saying there. Interestingly, Megan followed it up with a tweet later on afterwards saying that another club, another WSL club, a comms manager had said to her last season, "We don't need you anymore," which I thought was really interesting to say to a journalist one because, like, it's going to come out in
Because
the
they're going to
wash
say that. It's going to come out,
somewhere.
yeah.
But also, and it's something that frustrates me a lot, and I see it across like multiple different sports. It's not just a football problem, it's not just like a women's football problem, you know, it comes in men's sports as well. And like clubs do have so much access to players now that, and like there's so many in-house content creators and, you know, people doing cool videos of a team or cool videos of a player that I can see where this whole idea of like, well, we have our own audience, we have all this access, we're not going to ask them the tricky, sticky questions, so we don't need this other side of the media. But what I think like teams forget a lot of the time is that you're not going to, especially in something like football where people are being transferred, you're not going to have access to that person forever. Or like they might not. They might come to a point where they're frustrated with the manager or they're frustrated with the club or they're trying to like force a move. So they're going to go to the media. You know, they're not going to go to the in-house videographer and say, "Here, I really want
Yeah.
to push a move to City. I know I'm with United at the moment and it's, you know, whatever, but like I really want to go to City. Can you help me out?" You know, that's not
Yeah,
going to happen. So
clubs can't control their players either. And also, I think like football fans, they know that those videos are just curated little snippets and everyone's going to be happy, jolly, and stuff. You want the post-match reaction. You want Maëlle Tissier putting the club, putting her own team on blast to say we need to be better. That's what, like, we want to, you want to hear that when your club's in the trenches. You want to, people to know, right, we accept that we're in a sticky patch. We're going to try and improve on it. We are feeling the same things that you're seeing. And that comes, that doesn't come from like TikTok or whatever. Do you know? Like, you can't say you don't need journalists. You still need journalism.
Yeah, you need responsible journalism, like good reporting, source reporting. You know, when I'm talking about this, I'm definitely not talking about that kind of fan level of journalism that just sometimes goes over the top. We're talking about, you know, proper, considered reporting when it comes to
Which is
these
what I
things.
would have called that Athletic article about Man United.
100%. Okay, let's quickly look at Chelsea. They took a big jump towards qualifying for the Champions League next season, with their 4-1 win over, oh my God, I've totally blanked who they are.
Everton.
Everton. I was like, it's the blue team. With their 4-1 win over, it's been a long day, Card. With their 4-1 win over Everton. I mean, the most interesting thing to come out of this, apart from Sam Kerr's scoring record just keeping on improving, is probably Bompasser calling for VAR in the league. And this is something that we've talked about on the podcast quite a lot. My personal view is that, yes, obviously, more technology that is going to improve the game is great, but can we get proper training for the referees that are there first and improve the general standard of refereeing first before we go adding more complications into it? Because as we have seen from the men's side of the game, VAR is definitely not a fix-all.
No, it's not a fix-all. I think she's like, I suppose at a bare minimum, you expect maybe goal line technology to be accessible to the home grounds of WSL teams. I'm not sure what goes into that, but you'd imagine it was there before VARs, so it's easier. So I suppose that's what it's about. And Sam Kerr should have broken Kirby's record with her hat trick, but wasn't to be. Yeah, like there's always going to be the advocates, there's always going to be the naysayers. I think you're right. I think generally there's been a call for improved standards in refereeing. Is there an intermediate thing in between, like improving referees and VAR, or how, like, they need to, oh, the powers that be need to bump heads on this, because you're going to have managers like that who are going to continue to call it out. And that's the pressure that they need to improve. So I hope that more managers say what Bompaster does. She doesn't, she's not going to be afraid to call it out because she's drives standards, and there should be more people like that in the league, hopefully.
I think we've definitely heard it before from the top table teams. You know, I've definitely heard Sleggers, Skinner, I'd say Gareth Taylor when he was at City as well, talk about it. I would worry. I do think that, yes, improve standards, but I would just worry that bringing VAR in at this stage would just provide more complications. I mean, to be fair, the Sam Kerr goal, a pair of eyes probably should have been enough to see that that one was over the line. Courtney doing her best attempt to make it look like it wasn't, but like it was fairly significantly over the line.
Yeah, I'd be afraid that the referees might become reliant on VAR, instead of there being like this continuous like movement to improve the standards of refereeing before we get there. Like, you could become too comfortable with it. And just wait for VAR to make all the decisions, in which case it will slow the game down, and that's the last thing we kind of want in women's football, is to slow it down to that extent. Like, the odd time it would be fine, unless there was like, yeah. So yeah, I think you're right. Improving standards comes first, and seeing an action plan there, goal line technology will need to be called for now, because right, if that happens in a relegation battle, or this City Arsenal in the running for the league here, like, that's huge consequences.
Yeah, compared to this game where, you know,
it was a walk in the park for Chelsea.
Yeah, and the main complaint was Sam Kerr not getting more goals, not even a goal. No. It was not getting more goals. But no, you are right. It does need to happen. And maybe it's a case as more and more teams, you know, start playing in the principal stadiums, you know, that's what we'll see. Chelsea obviously announcing, well, accidentally leaked their own news, which is also why it's important to have journalists in these things, like, driving standards. But they have released that they are going to play all their games in Stamford Bridge next season, which will be interesting because despite the success of the team, I don't think Chelsea have had the same success as the likes of Arsenal in terms of driving numbers to Stamford Bridge for games. So maybe being there more regularly will help that. But it'll be interesting to see what they actually do put into it from a marketing perspective.
Big time, yeah. They're obviously looking across at the numbers that Arsenal are getting at games. Maybe this is like the first step in an engagement plan that they have, hopefully, as well. Because for a team who have given as much to the league and who have driven the standards as much as they have, they don't feature in the same way in terms of popularity as Arsenal do. And maybe again it's just how Arsenal have driven their internal like engagement with fans and stuff like that, so they can certainly learn from their neighbours. But it depends on management, like how much access they want to give. Like we always talked about how much Emma Hayes protected her players and she was successful because of it. So there's probably a balance to be struck there as well. Yeah.
Yeah. We shall see how it all unfolds next season.
Just before we move on from them, Lauren James was spectacular again.
Yeah.
You know, when she wants to...
When she turns it on, it is pure magic.
Yeah.
She looks like she could support the entire team on her back.
Pretty much. Yeah, she just glides. She just glides through games.
Yeah.
You do that two-footed. It's, yeah.
I hope for her sake she manages to stay fit and make the World Cup next summer, because again, I don't think we got to see the best of her in Australia.
Yeah, I think there's a redemption arc to come there for her as well.
100%.
In an England jersey, I think she deserves to be as revered as some of the other players, and she doesn't seem to be yet.
See, Millie Bright and Rachel Daly were supposed to forced to apologize a couple of weeks ago because they used the photo of her standing on another player as a thumbnail for their podcast.
They should apologize. You know how I feel about current players and their podcasts, and that's silly.
Yeah.
Like, that is a teammate.
It seemed like now they said that it was production staff, they had nothing to do with it, but also like, get a better team around you. It just seems a bit too obvious, especially when there's, you know, nothing to be talked about that hasn't been said
again,
about that.
There's this whole thing that it probably drove traffic, and it's like, what is your ultimate goal out of this?
Yeah, although I don't know what I want to face the wrath of women's football fans who, when they're not happy about something, are a scary bunch.
They're a protective breed of person.
Protective. That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Quickly, we'll just look at the bottom of the table, and West Ham pretty much, you know, cementing the fact that they won't be going into a relegation playoff with that 1-0 win over Liverpool, while Leicester fell to a 5-1 defeat to London City Lionesses. It seems all but certain now that it is going to be Leicester that are fighting it out for their place.
Yeah, definitely. I think we could feel that coming for a long time, because even when they kind of played well in games, they still were losing, and we're kind of waiting for performances to turn into results. And actually, it went the other way, where they seem to be starting to not have that kind of defensive resilience at all. London City Lionesses were obviously good, and it was the first time I think we've seen what's the coach's name again?
Lionesses.
I think it's the first time we've actually seen him happy after a game. So they were They were good. Like he said, they continued to attack. They continued to look for goals. They played with a bit more energy. I think still sometimes they can make better decisions, and maybe having another year together now with, obviously they had a change of manager mid-season as well, and it's brand new kind of squad. I think they need a bit of a settling period. I don't know if that's going to happen or if they're just going to continue to bring in more and more players, to reach the goal that they're setting for themselves. But yeah, a good performance by them. But yeah, Leicester are, they've, yeah, it's the writing's on the wall, I'm afraid, but it's been coming for a few years. To be fair, they have to be given their kudos for hanging in there for as long as they have, to be honest.
Yeah, they have definitely pulled it out of the fire more than enough times at this stage, to earn a bit of kudos. And like again, even though they are at the bottom of the table with the way things are changing, it's not all totally doom and gloom for them. Like they will have other opportunities, should they choose to take them. But yeah, they look like a team that's running on empty at the moment, I think.
Big time.
And I think even just the general motivation as well doesn't really seem to be there in the team in the way that we've seen them pull out big performances in previous seasons.
Yeah, it's too hard for them now, like I said, because they put it all into a lot of those games where they got nothing out of it. And yeah, I think you're right. I think they're gassed at this point of the season, and they should probably be just making a plan for those kind of playoffs,
Yeah.
off the next couple of games, and just like play the way you plan to play against those teams, because we'll be different. Like there'll be a different approach to those kind of games as you would against a Man City or an Arsenal. You have to go out and win.
Yeah, and you're also going to be going up against teams who've been fighting tooth and nail for the last part of the season. Just looking at some of the results in the championship yesterday, Charlton currently top of the table, but they drew with Southampton. Birmingham as well had a loss to Ipswich. They're on 41 points, so one behind Charlton. A win there would have put them ahead of Charlton. And then you have Crystal Palace, who did get the win 2-1 against Sunderland for them yesterday. They're also on 41 points, so Birmingham just ahead on goal difference. So it really is all to play for those teams at the moment, and kind of very exciting football, I have to say.
Yeah, I know, like I don't know how I feel about the expanded league, but I am excited for the up and down kind of playoffs and what that's going to bring.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it'll be interesting to see how much that kind of really competitive, tight, like top of the table is going to affect the teams that do eventually end up in the playoff. Okay. Thank you very much for another lovely evening chatting football with you. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, proud sponsors of the Republic of Ireland national teams. As we have said throughout the podcast, there is still lots of exciting football to be played over the coming weeks, and we will be chatting about it all, as well as building up to those qualifiers for Ireland coming up in June. So, still plenty to play for, still plenty to talk about. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and we will see you all again very, very soon.